We've watched the evolution of the farm to table movement. We see the trend toward knowing where our food comes from and the growth of farmers markets. And yet we're still many miles removed and perhaps generations removed from what is happening on family farms. We're talking about Wisconsin's farming heritage on this edition of Wisconsin Life. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A traveling exhibit showcases five farm sites and celebrates their diversity through oral histories and artifacts and images. The project is called The Lands We Share. James Levy is director of the Public History Program at UW-Whitewater. In 2012, he founded the Wisconsin Farms Oral History Project, and he's director of the Lands We Share initiative. James, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So you founded this oral history project here in Wisconsin and collecting oral histories from farmers across the state. How did that grow into the Lands We Share work?
Well, I direct the public history program at Whitewater, and one of the points of it is to really get students involved in community-based history. So I thought that the state of Wisconsin had these amazing resources, the Historical Society, the Extension Program, all the great campuses throughout the state. So I organized about five different campuses, and we set out collecting oral histories. We collected about 400 of these things over the course of about 5 years, and we decided it was time to really engage with the public more directly. So we thought a traveling exhibit to engage public dialogue would be a really, really great way to do that.
Walk us through this exhibit. What would we see? What would we hear?
It's a combination of traditional exhibit in that it's got text and photos and some artifacts. But this is based on an oral history project, so there's some really great audio. We have these five, as you mentioned, five different farms. And so it's sort of set up as it's a traveling exhibit, so it's built in a modular way. It's got five different stations, one for each farm. It's also got a lot of interactive components. So you would hear voices of farmers. You'd hear their historical context. Each one really focuses on a piece of land. And so what we try to do is overlap all the stories that enter that land, whether it's workers and owners or whether it's generations of people who have been on that same land going way back.
So five different farms throughout Wisconsin. There are 68,500 farms in our state.
You.
You had to probably do a little bit of winnowing down.
Yeah, absolutely.
How did you choose?
Well, I mean, that's where having this collection really helped. We took, this is all based on student and faculty work, so we took a lot of time going through. Certain stories pop out. This story is really much a lot about cultural diversity, so we wanted to have a representative group of five farms, and the campuses suggested we had nominations and of people who would be great, and we thought a really wonderful cross section of the state.
James Levy is with us, founded the Wisconsin Farms Oral History Project, and he's director of the Lands We Share initiative. Are you a farmer or an urban gardener in Wisconsin? We want to hear from you. 800-642-1234. How long has your farm been in your family, and how long have you been gardening? Why do you farm? How do you find your way to this profession? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So James, help us connect with a couple of these farms that are really interesting and that are in the exhibit.
Oh, well, they all are. Just real quickly, the diversity is we have the Oneida Nation has a farm. It's several farms, including a 5,000-acre one. We have an urban garden in Milwaukee in a predominantly African-American neighborhood. We've got a dairy farm and a vegetable farm in Oshkosh, and then we have a Hmong-owned farm. Actually, the first Hmong-owned farm to be organically certified in the state. They're all fascinating. I think what's most fascinating is the connections, the parallels from the Oneida Reservation to Milwaukee to the Hmong farm. I mean, these things aren't unexpected, but there's a lot of overlap.
What are the connections? What are the through lines that you found?
You know, one of the surprising through lines is how many people come from families that were refugees, actually. It's interesting. Displacement is a common theme here. So if you think about the Oneida Nation, I mean, this is a group of people who come from New York, and even when they're in you know, in Wisconsin, there's the common theme of being kind of removed, losing a lot of land. And connection to farming actually is a part of that story and trying to reclaim land. And you connect that to, surprisingly, to Milwaukee and the urban gardens in Milwaukee. I mean, not only do you have people, many of them came up, you could describe them as refugees from the South and during times of violence during the Great Migration. But even within Milwaukee, you have this story of displacement with Bronzeville being basically destroyed by the building of the highways or the attempted building of the highways. And so, you know, I bring these two very different groups together and we see these common themes. And this is actually in every single farm, that theme.
What are these farms producing? Oh, I mean, I know there's a dairy farm, but right. what are some of the farms putting out here?
The United Nations has buffalo, but they also do really large-scale crop, cash cropping. Farm in the garden in Milwaukee, they do all kinds of different vegetables. The Hmong farm is all vegetables, and a lot of it's focused on Asian markets, bringing sort of Asian foods and Laotian foods to people who want to buy them in the farmers markets. You name it, we basically have it covered.
So one of the sites you chose was Metcalf Park right. Legacy Garden. That's this community garden in Milwaukee.
That's
it's
right.
not a traditional farm. Why did you choose to include that in the project?
Well, I mean, a lot of this project is really, I mean, we've made the case that we're at a time where people aren't really talking to each other across regional and cultural, racial, ethnic divides. And we found that farming is a really great common ground, so to speak. So it was really important for us to get urban agriculture involved. Milwaukee arguably has the leading urban agriculture, is the leading urban agricultural city in the world, certainly one of them. So we looked at Metcalf Park. We had some partners, Groundworks Milwaukee, who were working with this neighborhood. It's fascinating, and the more we got into it, the more we realized how amazing this place is. Danelle Cross is a woman who runs the Community Bridges Association there. It's just wonderfully rich.
When you looked at these oral histories and you heard these stories, do you see these farms, these farmers, farming families evolving with the times? And how have the challenges changed or
yeah.
stayed the same?
Well, some of them are going to be pretty familiar to listeners, I think. You know, the Detman Farm, which is who we're featuring these weeks right now, and you'll mm-hmm. talk to Mike in a minute, that's a perfect example, right? So you have German immigrants who come to Wisconsin, again, another story that relates to the refugee story, and they found a farm in 1902, pretty small farm, 73 acres, they had maybe a dozen cows. And they were one of the lucky ones to stay involved in dairy. They had to grow. They have 500 cows now. They're doing really well. And they're also embedded in the community, have incredible goodwill. And they're maintaining a lot of their family traditions. So I think it's that blend that keeps a farm going. And, you know, the United Nations has, after the casinos got going, they were able to raise money and buy back land. That's one of their focuses, and in that they've really grown this quite amazing 5,000-acre farm, the United Nations farm.
How close-knit are these farmers and these farm sites with the community where they're located?
Very much. I think every single one. I think the most obvious one where there may have been an obstacle was in the Hmong farm. And we tell that story that Chu and Chia Vang come from Laos, and they end up in many different parts of this country and in Wisconsin, and they buy this farm between Milwaukee and Madison because that's where their two kids are. And they have some, you know, there's a challenge to really establishing themselves from a dairy country into their vegetable farm. But, you know, we met the old family that lived there before them. We brought them together, and they have, they are completely accepted now.
We're talking about the Lands We Share project. It includes a traveling exhibit, includes public dialogues, focuses on farming, land, culture, and history here in Wisconsin. Talking with James Levy, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you grow up on a family farm? Have you preserved artifacts or taken down oral histories from your farming ancestors? Do you farm? What is it about farming that you love? 800-642-1234. We'd love to hear your stories. We'll pick up the conversation in a minute on the Ideas Network. The there was a time when if you didn't grow up on a farm, you knew at least a farmer. And this conversation reminds me of my ancestors, my great-great-grandparents, who immigrated to North Dakota and arrived here in a snowstorm. And there are these stories passed down about how they fed the cattle in whiteout conditions, and they tie a rope between the farmhouse and the barn so they could safely get back and forth. One story passed down in my family. What about yours? 800-642-1234. We're talking about the Lands We Share exhibit on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. James Levy directs the public history program at UW-Whitewater, and he heads up the Lands We Share initiative. He stays with us. Is there a farming tradition in your family? How is it been preserved and cherished? Is farming part of the community where you live? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. And now let's bring in Mike Detman to the conversation. He's co-owner of Detman Dairy Farms, founded in 1902. Mike, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me. Good morning.
Well, introduce us to Detman Dairy Farms. It's over a century old. Tell us about your farm.
Oh, yeah, we're presently a 500-cow dairy here in Johnson Creek, Wisconsin, in Jefferson County. My dad and I are partnered in owning the operation. We also crop about 2,000 acres, which serve us for food for the cattle and some cash grain as part of our enterprise as well.
So those 2,000 acres, what do you produce there?
There's corn, soybeans, wheat, and alfalfa for our farm.
And so it's you and your dad in this operation. You work very closely together, I imagine, every day. What is a day like?
Well, our morning milking starts at 3 in the morning, and I don't necessarily have to be there myself every day, but it's when the lights come on around here. My dad and I usually touch base by 7 o'clock or so and plan our day of whatever, you know, if it's springtime, we're obviously getting things lined up for planting, and as summer rolls on, we're harvesting hay and of course fall harvest for the rest of the crops. So the time of year really determines what we're doing each day.
And Your farm was started in 1902 by your ancestors?
Yes, that was my great-grandfather that purchased the land we're on presently.
How have you seen the land change or evolve since your great-grandfather started the operation?
Well, I guess the word would be expansion. We started out, as James said earlier, we started out with a little over 70 acres here, and we've grown now to the farm we stand with at 2,000, but we purchased lands nearby and also began renting land over the years and to grow the cropping enterprise. And then here on the farm, we've added cows over the years as well. I'd say my dad was probably the largest driver in the expansion. He was always been on willing to take on new technologies as they became available, and also we've added personnel over the years to help us do the work. So.
I know this is probably a difficult time for you because almost a year ago to the day, your farm went up in a huge fire threatening your cows, your livelihood. Can you tell us about that and how you've been?
Yeah, that was a little bit of a blow to us. Our milking facility caught fire January 13th of 2017. My morning crew came in to do the chores that morning and found our dryers on fire. We use cloth towels for the dairy to clean cows for the milking procedure. And that's what ignited the thing. That was hard to take. It hit. Hit us right in the heart of the operation with our milking facility. We could no longer function as a dairy farm, and besides being a cold morning itself, was hard to take. We were unsure of our future for a short time, but a few phone calls later, we had a home for our cattle, and we began the rebuild process shortly thereafter. And And today we're back in action. The rebuild went by about 90 days. We were able to reconstruct the parlor and with help from neighbors and friends and things. So we made that rebuild, I think, fairly quickly considering the time of the year. And the cows are home and happy and producing well. And we're back in the routine of things. And it made me very proud to be a member of the dairy community, because without the support we received that day and in the months afterwards, we probably wouldn't be doing what we're doing right now.
So when that fire occurred, your cows had to be moved. I mean, they would have had no shelter. Did you have to move them out to neighboring farms temporarily?
Yeah, we had two farms that just as luck and blessings would have it, had recently made room for more cattle on their own farms. Kevin Griswold at Tague Lane Dairy in Exonia, and McFarlandale, the McFarland family in Watertown, had recently added buildings to their farms and had space. And we were trying to find home for 500 cows, and that's not an easy task, as you can imagine.
Wow. No.
They fortunately had space to take us in, and besides that, I don't think I made any phone calls that morning looking for help to move cattle, but by 10 o'clock in the morning, we had trailers lined down the driveway of our farm looking to help move cattle just by word of mouth. And it was a sight. It was still gets me choked up a little bit.
Oh, my goodness. What did that teach you about community, the power of community?
In the farming, we attend conferences and meetings and things like that. We are a fairly close-knit community, but that really drove the point home for sure. And besides just the other farmers, our neighbors up and down the road here, that most of which we've lived next to for decades, without asking, they stepped in and brought food, brought help with the cleanup and the rebuild, and it really brings that sense of community home to us and the support we have in the area.
We're talking with Mike Detman. His family farms, Detman Dairy Farms, is featured in the Lands We Share exhibition. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about farming? Perhaps you have an oral history to share about your family and your family farm. 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Mike Detman, what does it mean for you to be involved in the Lands We Share project, and what was it like to get that call to say, hey, would you be a part of this?
That's definitely an interesting opportunity for us. I have a place in my heart for history, whether it's the farm history or anything else. I do like the History Channel. It's one of my favorite spots on TV, so it definitely was an opportunity. And besides that, my dad and I and my wife as well, we've kind of joined, I know you mentioned earlier on your show, this disconnect from that the general public has. Where growing up, you used to either be part of a farm or knew somebody that was, and that isn't as true anymore. And so over the last few years, we have kind of taken some time out of our day to tell the public, what we're doing on the farm. We have a Facebook page for the farm, and my wife is very active on social media, kind of telling our story. And so the Lands We Share project was definitely another way to get our story out there and also relive some of the history that Wisconsin has here on farming.
Earlier this week, we were talking about the difficulty on dairy farms in the area of day laborers working, the migrants working on farms and immigrants working on farms. As you grew as a dairy, did you look to labor from Mexico in order to keep your farm going? And is this a reality for you?
Is. When we made the expansion in 1997 to go to 500 cows where we're at today, we did turn to the migrant labor for the milking and other chores around the farm. I guess I could say it's probably not as glamorous or maybe as lucrative of a job that American labor is looking for anymore. There definitely, I don't want to say that we don't have American help on farm. We certainly do, but it did get hard to fill positions on the farm, and so we did turn to the migrant workforce, and it's been keeping us going ever since.
Well, really appreciate you taking time for us, Mike. Thank you so much, and best of luck to you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Mike Detman is with the Lands We Share initiative. It is one of the farm sites as part of the Lands We Share project. And we're talking also with James Levy, who stays with us and heads up the project. He's public history program at UW-Whitewater, founded the Wisconsin Farms Oral History Project. Your stories on Wisconsin's farming history are welcome, 800-642-1234. If you're in farming, what do you love about it? What challenges do you see? Has farming been passed down in your family? Have you inherited the family farm? And what challenges and opportunities do you encounter? Call in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation in a moment on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're getting a glimpse into the farming experience with the Lands We Share traveling exhibit. It features the history of five farm sites, and it's a collaboration of faculty and students at four campuses, UW-Whitewater, UW-Oshkosh, UW-Milwaukee, and UW-Madison. The head of the project, James Levy, stays with us. And now let's bring in Stephanie Hoff. She is a junior at UW-Madison, where she studies life sciences communication. She's a social media coordinator for the Lands We Share and has also conducted oral histories for the project. And she grew up on a hobby farm in Thorpe, raising pigs and beef cattle. Stephanie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us about how you got involved in the Lands We Share.
I got involved my freshman year of college in the Lands We Share project. One of my professors was Troy Reeves, who's the head of the UW Archives. He's also a part of the project. I took an oral history class with him, and he knew I had a background in agriculture, knew I was passionate about it. He liked my work in the classroom, and so he asked me to be a part of the project, and I've been a part of it ever since.
James, why is it important to have students have a hand in this project?
Well, I mean, this is what we do as professors. I mean, if you're not doing college projects with students, then I don't think you're doing your job completely. But I would also say there's this discussion about the disconnect between communities and the university, and I think it's an artificial one, especially in a state school system. The community is in our classrooms. The students are part of the community. So, I mean, Stephanie's a perfect example, having farm experience. But a lot of the connections we've made with various communities, and of course we're focusing on diversity, have been made by students who are in those communities.
And have that firsthand knowledge and experience.
Absolutely.
And also the contacts as well.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, and bring that rapport with the community in order to gather those stories.
That's right. I mean, Milwaukee's a perfect example of that. So was the Oneida Nation. In Milwaukee, we had a student who grew up, by coincidence, about a few blocks from the Metcalf Park Garden. And I don't think we would have had connection, because they're very, in a very smart way, they're very protective of their community at Metcalf Park. And they have a lot of outsiders that have come in, and they, you know, it hasn't always worked out. And our student, Donovan Hempel, was instrumental in getting us that connection.
Well, Stephanie, over the past years, you've done some oral histories for the project. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, so I have done three oral history interviews for the project. The first I did was with a farmer in his 90s, a farmer who just couldn't seem to retire and still helped his kids on the farm. He talked a lot about how, you know, times have changed in farming. So he grew up on a farm that didn't have electricity, and he talked about first getting electricity. And we talked, you know, how machinery, equipment has changed. In today's world, tractors are a lot bigger than they once were. And it meant a lot to his family to record this. He told some stories that his family hasn't heard, and they were there with me when I was interviewing, and so that was very special. I've also interviewed a college student who works with F.H. King, which is a student garden on campus. It's a student organization. And she talked about urban farming and how, coming from Chicago, she did not have any agriculture background. She found a passion for it here at UW and carries that back home with her. The third oral history interview I've done is for the Lands We Share initiative specifically. It was with one of our featured farms, the Allen Farm, their son, who grew up on a farm like I did, raised pigs, and we shared a lot of commonalities and some stories. It was a really fun interview. But we also talked about how he left farming, didn't, you know, really want to be a part of it, didn't want it to be part of his future. But, you know, as he's gotten older, he wants to go back to it, and he can't break that connection.
Oh, and I'm sure you had that connection with raising pigs that helped you even in putting together all the questions you would ask for the project. You know, just give us a glimpse of how you prepared to do these oral histories.
Yeah, so, I mean, we have some, like, some outline of how, you know, we're looking to get history information, culture information, community information from our narrators. And so we have that outline. But, you know, I also knew that they had pigs. So, I mean, it was a fun way for me to kind of connect my background with them. And it was really fun. It's fun to share commonalities with someone that you're interviewing. It allows for a better conversation, too.
Did you find that you like doing these interviews, these oral history projects? Do you think that oral history is an avenue that we should be pursuing?
I do, and maybe I'm biased because I have taken oral history courses and I do work in the UW archives. I really enjoy doing oral history interviews. It's probably my favorite part of the project, is learning more about these people, where they come from, their families and history. It's really neat. I also think it's important, just for personal reasons, if you interview your own family members and you capture these stories and that you may not ever get.
Has it changed your perspective on farming at all?
It's definitely broadened, like, my knowledge on farming. I mean, just because I'm, you know, have an agriculture background doesn't mean I know everything about agriculture. So it's important to, you know, learn about different types of farming, about organic farming, like monoculture culture and farming. You know, people do conventional and organic farming, dairy, vegetables. There's a lot out there.
James Levy, with all of these hundreds of oral histories you've done on these farmers, how are you archiving them, and how are you preserving them?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a lot easier these days because of digital, but that's where Troy Reeves comes in. He runs the oral history office here in Madison. So we basically make many copies in many forms of all of our interviews. We transcribe them as much as we can. That's a big process. Takes a lot of time and money. We catalog them and index them, and all of these are available digitally. What we haven't done yet, and is one of our big goals, is to build a real website and a collection, kind of search engine, so it's much more publicly accessible. But we have hard copies of transcripts in our office in Whitewater, and we have digital copies everywhere.
The Library of Congress may come knocking.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
you never know. Never know.
Yeah.
And then there are public dialogues along
That's
the way with this project. How do those work in?
Well, I mean, in some ways, this is a public dialogue project. So we like to say, I mean, the exhibit's great. We want people to come and see it for its own sake. But really, it's built as a means to an end, to frame conversations. So we use the exhibit to kind of trigger questions. And then we have these community events. So the exhibit travels from place to place. Each place it goes is where one of the farms is. And then within the 3 or 4 week run, we'll have a community dinner. So, for example, we're having one on Thursday in Johnson Creek, the 17th. And we've done 3 so far. And, yeah, about 50 to 100 people. We try to cap it at 100 just because of room and cost and all that. And we'll give a farm-to-table dinner. Someone will bring local farms to source it, even in winter. And then we will end the dinner and have a conversation where some of the questions that have come out in our interviews we'll sort of throw back at the group. And we'll have this great community conversation. They're really fun.
What are some of those questions that you've thrown to the group in these public dialogues?
Well, when we were in the Oneida Reservation, I think there was a question about the importance of ownership. This turned into a real interesting debate, which went along the lines of one side of the room debating that ownership and buying back land was crucial to regaining Oneida culture and, mm-hmm. and tradition, and the other side of the room was saying that maybe ownership isn't part of our identity. That's one example. We had a couple weeks ago in Fort Atkinson, we had a discussion on what makes a family farm, what defines a family farm, was one of the questions. And it turned into an interesting debate about why is that even important, and how, and to scale of agriculture, how to scale affect communities, and what it means to be a farmer.
Oh, that's fascinating. What did you hear about what defines a family farm, Stephanie?
One lady said, it's a family farm if you sleep on it. So that was interesting. She was serious. Some people laughed, but that was a serious answer. And
I mean, we were just talking about this. Some people define it as you can do all the work in one family. You don't need to employ other people. But we were talking to the Detmans about this the other day, and you know, it's that would be a pretty high bar. There are very few businesses that are family businesses that can make that argument. So. And it's interesting how people connect to that term, right? It's just a label, but it's important to a lot of people to be able to call themselves family farms, I think.
Yeah. Stephanie, what will stay with you about this project and perhaps impact your major and your trajectory?
Well, this project goes right with my major, life sciences communication. All of the experiences I've had during this project will stay with me, from doing the interviews to, you know, posting on Facebook to attending these events and being a listener as well as like critical thinker.
Do you think this project changes the perception of farming in Wisconsin for people who are not so connected to a farm family?
I think yes. I think it would. And I think that more importantly, it brings a community together to talk about it and kind of gets rid of like misconceptions, maybe bringing people together to talk.
James, will this project inspire any young farmers out there or, future farmers?
Right,
because
right.
It's been difficult keeping farms going, and we've heard that young people aren't wanting to go in the business.
Right, right. And I think Stephanie can, a lot of her peers are in that boat. We hope so. The Detman's a great example of, we just did an interview with Drew Detman, who's 14 and gonna stay as a farmer. I think one of the ways we will do that in the long term is to work more with high schools, with FFA, 4-H, which is part of our plan, but we certainly hope so.
Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for stopping by.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Stephanie Hoff is a life sciences communication major at UW-Madison. She's helping with the Lands We Share project. We'll continue talking about this with its director, James Levy, getting your farming heritage stories. They'd be wonderful to hear at 800-642-1234. Here's a question for you. What makes farming in Wisconsin special? Let's talk about it. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about the Lands We Share traveling exhibit. It's on display now in Johnson Creek. It will move to UW-Whitewater at the end of the month, be on display into February. After that, it's traveling to the Wisconsin Black Historical Society Museum in Milwaukee. And the exhibit will conclude with a closing night gala May 8th at the Madison Central Library in downtown Madison. And more information is at landsweshare.org. James Levy stays with us. He's director of the Public History Program at UW-Whitewater. He founded the Wisconsin Farms Oral History Project, and he leads the Lands We Share initiative Initiative. Your questions and stories about the farming heritage in Wisconsin are welcome at 800-642-1234. What do you think about taking oral histories of farmers? Have you done this in your family? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Tom now, who is in Green Bay. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
Go ahead.
I'm calling it. I'm 87 years old, but my father was a large cattle dealer in Waupaca and Outagamie counties way back when. And I've noticed the difference then, and I still found out this year, there's the farmers who farm because for a living and the other neighbors who farm for a life. Mm. And I'm telling you, we could walk into the farm to pick up cattle or horses or pigs, and if the farmer was just in it to make a living, those cows would, the minute you open the door, the cows would just shiver and stand stark still. You go into the guy that had it for a life, and those cows would almost be welcoming you. They would moo and nod their heads. And I was in the Farm Progress Days last year in Kewaunee, the first time I'd been to a farm, and we milked 2,500 cattle. And it was like those cows as we were riding through on a trailer. Those cows were like nodding at us and welcoming us. It was, so things haven't changed.
Oh, Tom, I love that story. James, it is true that we talk to the cows, right? Yeah. As you walk the lines and look
Absolutely.
At the cows.
Yeah, I mean, I spent a day with a microphone walking into Detman Farm and just sort of having them breathe on me. I didn't realize how long their tongues were until I got up close to the mic. It was great. The sounds are wonderful.
I love that story. So you've been working on oral histories about farming and racial and ethnic identity for years now. And looking back, what do you think is the most important thing you've learned about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, there's so many things. I think one of the things you learn is how our hunch that everybody is connected to farming, or most people in some ways, really true if you start to put genealogy into it. And what that has meant and why people do what they do and how they've gotten into or away from farming has been fascinating. But I think one of the most sort of poignant things I've seen through this project is how emotional it is. I mean, you just heard Tom talk about his, right, some people do it for a living, some people do it for a life. And I think most people do it for the latter, right? For the life, for the emotion and even spiritual connection to farming. Urban, rural, everywhere, it's pretty profound.
Now, there is, very quickly here, we have another public dialogue coming up next
Yes.
Thursday.
Yeah, so we have these public dialogues in each place we go. So, right, this Thursday night at 6, and it's open to the public, so I hope people will consider coming. We will have this farm-to-table dinner. You can get a $30 dinner for $5. It's going to be great. The chef is amazing. All locally sourced. Johnson Creek Community Center. And if you're interested, you should go to our website, landsweshare.org. There's a sign up for the dinner site the page there.
And the exhibit will be open at the Village Hall in Johnson Creek, so you can see
That's
that at
right.
the same time
exactly.
as well.
That's
so
the point,
it'll be
yeah.
all wrapped up in,
right.
into a great evening. Well, James, this has been really such a treat. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me and us. That was really great. Thank you.
James Levy is the director of the Public History Program at UW-Whitewater. He founded the Wisconsin Farms Oral History Project back in 2012, and he's director of the Lands We Share Initiative. Now it is time for Wisconsin Life. White corn has long played a central role in the traditions of the Oneida Nation. In recent years, people living near Green Bay have begun to reclaim it. Tribal member Laura Manthe and the Oneida White Corn Growers Group have spent the past several years collecting seeds and planting, harvesting, and breeding the heirloom crop. In this second Wisconsin Life story from the Lands We Share Farming History Project, Manthe explains the origins of their effort. Here's producer Maureen McCollum.
In the 1950s, there were over 100,000 dairy farms in Wisconsin. Today, fewer than 10,000 remain. The Detman family are descendants of German immigrants and have a dairy farm in Johnson Creek. For more than 100 years, The family farm has expanded, modernized, and have partially relied on laborers from Mexico and Central America. Drew Detman is the oldest of the sixth generation of Detman family farmers, and he intends to stick with it. The Lands We Share Farming History Project recently caught up with the 14-year-old at the Jefferson County Fair and his family farm.
So mostly what the judges are looking for in the heifer classes are their feet and legs, their frame, all that stuff that makes them look dairy, I guess you could say. The cows here at my farm, at least, have a lot of neck fat. So what you can do in the ring is you can have one hand on the halter and the other hand you can have pulling up some of that fat so she doesn't look too chunky. It's serious, but it's mostly just people bringing their cows to show them at the fair and have fun with their friends. I'm Drew Detman. I am 14 and currently we are up at our farm. I feel like this is a pretty good size right now because it depends on how you all look at it. When you're not comparing it to the other bigger farms, you think it's, oh wow, this is a big farm, 500 cows all in one spot, and that's pretty big. But then you think about all the 10,000 cow farms and you realize that we're kind of small. So in the dairy prospect of farming, you can definitely see the bigger farms are thriving more right now just because of the lower milk prices, and the little farms are starting to get snuffed out one after another, sadly. Well, I first started driving the Gator, which is a side-by-side off-road vehicle. I first started driving that when I was about 11, which is a lot later than other farm kids, but hey, I mean, we got a lot of farm hands on the farm that do a lot of the work, so I didn't grow up in a family where I really needed to go out when I was 6 and start milking cows. So my dad would be down there because he was the herd manager, which means he had all the shot records and all the medicines that he needs to give everyone. And now that Juan works here, he's actually the herd manager. Now he's starting to take over some of that responsibility from my dad since my dad started running the farm. A few workers know broken English, but usually it's just Spanish that they're talking to each other with. So it was fun to hang out with them. They'd always try and teach me as much Spanish as they could, but, you know, I just went through the first class this past year in 8th grade, so starting to learn. I can count to 100 now, so. My grandpa took over the farm, then he got drafted for the war, and then when he got back, he took it back over, and then my dad is starting to take over now, so they're half and half right now. My grandpa owns half and my dad owns half, so someday it'll all be mine. It feels special to have that much history behind you going into the business. Because I feel like if my dad would have just started it, there wouldn't be so much pressure for me to take over it. But I feel like it's a great thing to take on, you know, carrying on the family tradition, you know? Because my dad and mom mostly, they keep telling me that, you know, oh, you don't have to go into farming. You can go into something else. You can go be a chef at McDonald's if you want to. But yeah, I've thought about other things, but I don't know. There's just something about it that having a family farm in Wisconsin, you know, family dairy farm in Wisconsin, just seems glamorous, so.
This story is part of the Lands We Share project and was edited by Craig Ely. The exhibit is in Johnson Creek through January, with a community conversation and dinner happening later this month. To reserve a spot for the dinner and learn more, visit landsweshare.org. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And you're with us on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show.